It is 6 p.m. January 6, 2026. Happy New Year to everyone that is present in Council Chambers and that is watching virtually. I'm going to call the City of Iowa City meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Alter.
Here.
Burgess.
Here.
Harmson.
Here.
Moe.
Here.
Select.
Here.
T.
Here.
Whalen.
Here.
All right. Well, welcome to your City Hall. And just want to take a moment just to acknowledge that we do have myself this morning in the organizational meeting that was reappointed to mayor, as well as Megan Alter, who has been appointed to mayor pro tem. And just wanted to just make that public announcement. Also wanted to just state gratitude to our former mayor pro tem, Mazahir Salah, and just wanted to give her a great round of applause for all the work that she did on the behalf of the City of Iowa City. We're going to move on to item number two, which is proclamations. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And it states, whereas the civil rights movement of the 1960s have profoundly impacted the course of American history and continues to shape the direction and debate of our society. And whereas one of the great leaders of the 20th century movement is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose dream is no less inspirational and important today than when he first expressed it over 60 years ago. And whereas even with the gains of the civil rights movement over the years, there are many goals and needs that must be pursued to continue our commitment to achieve justice in our society, including a commitment to economic justice in the face of increasing disparity between rich and poor. And whereas we look forward to the future with optimism, inspired by Dr. King's legacy and informed by his wisdom and vision, let us rededicate ourselves to keeping his dream alive and be reminded that we are united together as one community. Now, therefore, I, Bruce Teague, Mayor of Iowa City, do hereby proclaim Monday, January 19, 2026, to be Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the City of Iowa City as Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and encourage all of us to recommit ourselves to achieving Dr. King's dream. And receiving this proclamation is Human Rights Commissioner Roger Lucella.
Thank you, Mayor Teague, and thank you, Council. Roger Lucella, on behalf of the City of Iowa City Human Rights Commission, I'd like to say a few words to represent the great people that I work with. And the famous I Have a Dream speech by Dr. King is what most of us remember when we're talking about the work of Dr. King and his legacy. But what many don't remember or may not know, before the August 28, 1963 speech in Washington, 4 years before that, Dr. King was actually here in Iowa City. And Dr. King spoke on November 1959 at the Memorial Union. And he was introduced by the great Professor Robert Michelson at the School of Music. And Dr. King talked about the race relation before the infamous speech. And you can still listen to that speech at the Memorial Union. And the great the University of Iowa still have the speech, and they still have the record of that speech as well. And the room was full. There was people standing outside of the union listening to that speech. And that just goes to prove that even 60 plus years ago, Iowa City, we were in the front line of the human rights and making changes and pushing changes in our state of Iowa. And today, we are still doing that, even though we are just the little blue dot in the sea of red in our state. And that should never discourage us to keep pushing the limit. The great speech of Dr. King, the dream of Dr. King, of one day seeing his kid holding hands and not being judged by the color of their skin, but the content of their character, it's what most of us want our kids to be judged by. Mm-hmm. Many of us did not choose the color of our skin. Many of us did not choose the accent that we speak with. We were just happened to be born in different countries. Or we just happened to be born with beautiful parents that had the beautiful skin that they gave us. So it was not a choice that we made. I always say, if you're going to judge me by the choice that I make. Judge me by the color of the car I pick, or judge me by the work I do. Judge me because I chose to run for council. Some of us chose not to. and so those are the things you judge me by. But don't judge me by the things that I did not choose. 60-plus years later, Dr. King's dream is more important today than it was back then. 60-plus years later, we are still fighting for little black boys and black girls to hold hand and walk down the street without being judged. We're still fighting for them to be viewed as brothers and sisters. 60-plus years later, we are fighting for our immigrant brothers and sisters who came here for the search of that dream. Now they're being chased like criminals and animals on the streets, even though they are making contribution in this country, and some of them even more than those that were born here. 60-plus years later, our trans youth are taking their own life because they can't live another day in the America that we have created for them. 60-plus years later, women are still taking self-defense classes because they have to protect themselves against their brothers, the male counterpart, or they're still having to fight their way because they are still making less than their male counterpart, even though they are doing the same job, sometimes even better. You wonder why we still don't have a woman president. 60-plus years later, yes, we have made strides in medicine, mental health, technology, everything else, but we still have more homeless in the street. We say we have more people now visiting our food pantries than ever before. The poverty rate is still growing, and the disparity between riches and poor are just growing and growing and growing. But we're still calling ourselves the greatest country on earth, and we're even capable of kidnapping other countries' presidents. So 60-plus years later, Iowa City, let's keep the movement going. Let's keep being the pioneer. You know, we brought Dr. King here before the world knew Dr. King. So if we can keep that free bus going, about we keep working with our, you know, affordable housing and helping our homelessness and doing better things. So even though we are that blue dot in the state, and let's keep pushing with human rights and realizing that We might not do a lot, but we can do little in our bubble to help our brothers and sisters. So on behalf of the Human Rights Commission, thank you for this proclamation. And let's keep Dr. King's dream alive. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. We're going to move on to our consent agenda, items 3 through 8. Can I get a motion to approve, please?
So moved, Harmson.
Second, Mo.
All right. Anyone from the public like to address a topic on our consent agenda? I see no one present or online. Council discussion? Roll call, please.
Wyline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmson?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Sala?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes. Motion passes 7-0. We're at item number 9, which is community comment. Public comment is intended so that members of the public may be heard by council, because community comment is for items not properly noticed on the agenda. Council cannot engage in discussion or debate due to open meeting laws. I just wanted to see the hands of those that would like to speak during this open, during this time. Community comment. All right. I will be able to allow 3 minutes each for each individual. I'll invite you all to come up, sign your name. There is in the back some little stickers or sheets of paper that you can throw in the basket. So if you wanted to have that pre-filled out, you're more than welcome to get them in the back. We'll ask that you state your name and city you're from, and you'll be allotted up to 3 minutes. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Oliver Townsend, and I came to Alba City in 1962 on a football scholarship, and it was a rude awakening. I was born in East St. Louis, Illinois, which was an all-black community. I was awarded a football scholarship to the University of Iowa in 1962 when I came up as my recruiting visit. They showed me all of the good things. When I came back and arrived as a student, it was a rude awakening. In 1962, I could wake up and leave my room at Hillcrest Dormitory, and I could walk to McBride Auditorium to my class or lecture, and I often would not see anybody that looked like me. In 1962 in the University of Iowa, it was not safe for people that looked like me to walk the streets of Iowa City alone at night. Now, you're probably thinking like, wow, you know, we got a radical up there, but I'm not a radical. In a way, I kind of want to give Iowa City a pat on the back, because here tonight, I want to share with you that through God, all things are possible. The environment that I encountered in 1962 when I came to Iowa City was threatening, intimidating, and not safe for people that look like me. But today in Iowa City, anyone can walk the street. There are nobody hollering N-word or racial slurs. And if that happens, it's not a regular thing. It's somebody that's got a problem that eventually we may have to deal with. Our city has grown. Our city has come a long ways. And I think due to the fact that we've had good people in our city, good administration, and good people coming to our city is a much better and safer place today than it was in 1962. So I just wanted to share with you that I feel that, you know, you guys are doing one hell of a good job. But there are things that still need to be done, so I hope that you will continue to have open minds and invite the public to come before you, and when they do speak, you continue to hear them and do those things that are necessary to keep our city safe and strong. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll just invite people up. Please come forth. Welcome.
Hi. Marie Krebs here in Iowa City. I am here to speak about the vote that happened this morning. Felt like a punch in the gut, so I'm here to speak on that. Today, a majority of you voted to strip a black immigrant woman of her position in power. I can't think of one reason why this was a good idea. I tried to think about it. I tried to understand, and maybe I don't understand. But I'm left to assume that the white supremacist patriarchal pyramid scheme has struck again. It seems to always be striking. At a time when our immigrant relatives are under attack, their voices should be amplified, not pushed aside. For me, or representation matters, excuse me. Representation is very important. For me, there's pride in seeing a woman of color in power, and not just any woman of color, one that I see in the streets taking care of the people. Being a good relative, from what I've seen. Us women of color often hold our communities together with duct tape and bare threads, carrying all of the weight with little or even no support. And yet we still manage to do the impossible. As a young person, it wasn't fancy social workers and professionals holding my community together. It was the black and brown grandmothers. And I can't think of more important voices to stand in power than black and brown matriarchs. Women of color deserve to be inspired and have hope. And in my opinion, and how I felt, y'all took some of that away from me today. Just to be clear, I'm not saying people should have positions because they are women of color, just in general. I'm saying there aren't many of us as the great beneficiaries of affirmative action and DEI have gone to white women. So when we have a rare situation in which to support a woman of color who has gained the respect of community, who stands as a good relative to all of us, I think we should stand behind her. Lastly, I'd like to point out that white supremacy is an illness that infects more than just white people. I've seen the promise of money and power poison many of my skin folk. This vote, in my opinion, is not a good look, and I hope there's not enough money and power on earth that makes me throw my relatives under the bus. I truly hope that my assumptions are wrong, very wrong. I want that to be true. And that maybe there's a real reason behind this that makes sense. I can't think of any. And in my 47 years of life, I've seen a pattern. So I was very disappointed. We need women of color in positions of power. Thank you.
Thank you. I know, Sakawa, you were standing up. I don't know that people can see. Welcome.
Hi. I'm here to talk about the same thing today. I just was like really shocked to hear that Megan Alter self-nominated herself for this position, right? Is that what happened? Okay, so somebody nominated?
Council can engage or
okay,
respond.
So somebody nominated Megan Alter for this position. And I didn't know what to say because, I mean, during a time when immigrants are being abducted left and right and Iowa City is supposed to be a place where we're pushing back against that, I just thought it was a really bad look to take out somebody that's been representing immigrants and working for immigrants from day one since she's been here. And somebody who's always on the front line, somebody who's always in the community. Maybe, you know, Maza here isn't at enough committee meetings with folks to show how hard she's working because she's, you know, doing all the work with the community. But you know, Maza here to me is a great symbol of hope. To imagine, even though it's a ceremonial position, to imagine Maza here standing next to Bruce in these, you know, in these ceremonial positions at these events, it's a really great look, and it's something that gives us hope in a country right now that is, you know, being overrun by MAGA and white supremacy. And honestly, this little whatever happened here, this little vote that happened this morning, it is a really small example of what's happening at the federal level right now. It makes me upset to think that this is what Iowa City is moving towards. I know that we have to protect the status. Well, you have to protect the status quo, and keep, you know, them largely, you know, the whites and the well-off comfortable, and make moves, and, you know, so you get their votes. But in this particular matter, like, we could have kept this really great symbol for you know, black and brown folks, for the immigrant community, especially at a time, you know, when people are living in so much fear. I mean, like, what's next? Like, partnering with ICE and, like, putting together a detention center here? I'm just saying, like, this just ousting an immigrant right now just looks really bad to me, out of this position. And I just really hope that you can do better. This is a little liberal bastion, you know, in Iowa. And I know that this council is trying to do better. But the four of you, right, I don't know what you're doing, but please, for the sake of trans people, black people, brown people, women, immigrants, you know, vote better and think outside of what makes you comfortable and what makes, you know, these wealthy and privileged circles comfortable. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. Hello. My name is Abigail Escatel. I am a resident of Iowa City. I'm also a PhD candidate that's about to graduate in June as Dr. Escatel. And I am coming to you this morning because I heard the same disturbances from community folks that actually show up on the ground to be brave in this time, right? And I've never had the privilege of actually meeting you, Maza here, Sally, but I've heard amazing things from you about you this morning, and a lot of disturbed people. At one of the migrant, this morning, we did migrant accompaniments, this kind of afternoon. And in that space, we talked about what was happening in Iowa City and how people were disturbed that Megan Alter got the position, specifically saying something like to the effect of, I want to represent migrants. In that move, right, in representing migrants, she's actually removing a migrant who would best understand that subject position, right? And so I want to speak on behalf of the people who actually know her and who have talked about her, and I want to represent those people. And so some of the things to provide receipts for how amazing and remarkable she was as representation, she has been in several of these on the ground movements. So she has attended Orange Shirt Day, Solidarity for Sudan protests. She led an immigrant welcome network and hosting Voices of Resilience. She used to be a leader and for the Center of Worker Justice. At least she did a lot of help with that. Police Review Board, Global Food Project. She's been organizing Sudanese events in response to genocide for years. Anytime a vote for Palestine has come up or been discussed, she's voiced full support. Center for Worker Justice, of course, is another one. She turns up for SHPEP, which is a group at the University of Iowa that professionalizes students of color or marginalized students, disadvantaged students who don't have a lot of opportunity to get on the pre-med track, right? And that's really competitive, and it's an amazing program. And UIowa Human Rights. And she's been on one or more statewide housing task forces. one of the things one of my comrades said is, I think of her is that she stands in solidarity and support of immigrants from everywhere, uplift voices and experiences across cultures. She is one of the first, or actually the first, Sudanese American to hold this office in this country. And for all these reasons, I'm disappointed for you not to protect that role that she plays.
Thank you. Welcome. Please state your name and city you're from.
Roy Sam Porter, Iowa City, Iowa. I also want to speak from personal experience. I too lost my seat as the first African-American woman elected to a county seat. I know what it is. I know what it feels like when history is made and then seemingly set aside. I know what it feels like when your service, your sacrifice, and your leadership are acknowledged one moment and removed the next. That loss is not just political, it is personal, and it ripples through the community to represent, that you represent. What I learned through that experience is this. When trailblazers lose positions of leadership, it does not just affect one person. It affects trust, it affects belief, it affects whether the next generation thinks it is worth stepping forward at all. That is why moments like today matter. Not because leadership changes are illegal or improper, but because they sit within a much larger historical context, one where black leadership, especially black women leadership, is often harder to gain than easier to lose. We can celebrate Mayor Bruce Teague's victory, and I do, while still being honest about the pain and concern surrounding Mazahir Saleh's loss of the mayor pro tem. Both truths deserve space. Dr. King reminded us that progress is fragile if we are unwilling to confront uncomfortable realities. Speaking up is not divisive. It is necessary. And so today I want to tell you, being in this position, if you lose a position, it does not make or it does not stop who you are. We continue the work. There is work for us to do, and we do it. Nothing stops. So for them to get up here and act like everything has been taken away from you, it has not. You will continue to do what you do because that's who we are. And one more thing I want to say really quickly is that Mayor and council members, thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight in support of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s resolution. Dr. King was not just a dreamer. He was a disruptor of injustice. He challenged systems, policies, and practices that deny dignity to black people and to all people pushed to the margins. He reminded us that justice is not passive and that equality is not something we wait for. It is something we must actively work for. Honoring Dr. King's means more than words on paper or celebrations once a year. It means committing ourselves every day to the values he lived and died for: fairness, compassion, courage, and accountability. It means asking hard questions about who is being left out, who is being unheard, and who continues to carry the heaviest burdens in our community. In our city, we pride ourselves on being welcome and progressive. This resolution, this proclamation, changes us to ensure those values are reflected not only in our statements, but in our policies, our budgets, and our actions. It calls us to invest in people, protect the most vulnerable, and ensure that opportunity is not determined by race, zip code, or income. One thing Dr. King said was the time is always right to do what is right, and we continue to do that. Please join us on the morning of the Dr. Martin Luther Thank King you. Jr.'s Day on January the 19th at Mercer Park. Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening. Please state your name and city you're from.
My name is Marion Coleman, and I am actually from South Carolina, but I lived in Iowa City longer than anywhere else. I wanted to speak tonight because I feel I have something to say that's really important. I'm a person of color who came here in 1969. I worked as a teacher. I think I see one of my students sitting up there. And I also worked at trying to be a leader in Iowa City. I came here with my master's degree. Then I was told that I needed to go back to the university and get a degree in leadership. I did that. After I did that, still couldn't get a leadership job. Okay, but I didn't stop trying. Because in myself, I knew who I was and what I had to offer. I came from South Carolina. I went to segregated schools. Didn't know there would ever be an opportunity for me to work in a place like Iowa City, to live in a place like Iowa City, to raise my kids in a place like Iowa City. My kids are professionals. They work in all kinds of positions. I am proud of what they were able to do, but they were mostly born and lived here. I went to a segregated college. I went to a segregated graduate school. I came to Iowa because my husband got a Ford Fellowship, God knows how, to get his PhD. And so I had to come. But I was also working at the University of Georgia afterwards in a segregated school. So when I came to Iowa City, it was like, whoa, you know, what has he done to me? So I'm just saying that my whole reason for being here is that I tried to get a leadership position in Iowa City 4 times. And I was doing my job. And if anybody knows me, I was doing my job in the community. I was doing my job anywhere I could fit in. And trying to fit in as a minority is tough. But after 3 tries, I became the equity director for Iowa City Community School District. And I stayed there for 30 years. Iowa City is still a hard place to be in. Iowa City, you have to work, you have to look forward, you have to have faith in God. But what I want to say is just because it didn't happen the first time doesn't mean that it won't happen. If you have the stick-to-itiveness and the perseverance to keep trying and doing and showing, you have people who know what you did. I have people who knew and know what I did. But to this day, I will tell you, it's difficult to know that after 30 years in Iowa City School District, I am the only African-American administrator to retire from here. Okay, so I'm saying that we still have leaders and we still have people with stick-to-itiveness. But I would like to just say it doesn't mean anything is over. Just because somebody else says it, it doesn't mean it.
Thank you.
Stay in there. Fight.
Thank you. Welcome. Please state your name and city you're from.
Billy Townsend, and I am not from Iowa City. Everybody knows I'm from St. Louis. And again, like everyone else said, this was the biggest shock of my life when I moved here. But I found out it was a place that my 7-year-old, who's now 44, could grow and really become a man. The thing that I found out from Iowa City is, yeah, black women, it's hard to get up and really make a difference when you want to. At the University of Iowa, I was there for almost 30 years, mostly support staff, got my master's from the University of Iowa, applied for 10 jobs as PNS, professional and scientific, never got it till my last 4 years when I was 70, about to retire. And so my last 4 years, I was a director of a program, which was amazing. But I was kept down, but I kept going. Every Martin Luther King program from the time I started, I put on. It's amazing how much you can do as long as you don't get the credit for it. And that's kind of where we are. And I think what we do and what you all do is you're doing amazing things, even though you don't always get the credit for it. And even though you're not always you're not always given what you think you deserve, but we have to do it. It's for our children. I'm 80. So for my 44-year-old and my grandchildren, I want Iowa City to be safe. I want it to be comfortable. I want it to be led by people who have not only the concern of the rich, but the concern of the poor. And my thing, as you all know, is affordable housing. When I drive around and see people living on the streets in the winter, it hurts my heart. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing we can do about it individually. But as all of us together, if we do the right thing, we can make it work. So we don't have to get the credit. We just have to do the work. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Yep. And this will be our final speaker, because I don't think I saw any other hands raised during this time. Welcome.
Thank you. Nicole Yeager, Iowa City. There's a lot I'd like to say today, but I'll keep it to 3 minutes. You know, this summer, I'm here also to speak to that I believe that Mazaher should be mayor pro tem. I was really surprised this morning. I'm not sure who nominated or why they thought that was a good idea, but I mean, statewide, this is embarrassing. I come from small town rural Iowa. I have heard from my small town rural Iowa. I'm sorry. People really, Mazaher's leadership meant something not just to Iowa City. And this summer, I got to see just how much she means to our community. I got to be at Immigrant Welcome Network most days during the week and see how she truly, like, her phone is ringing, multiple phones ringing at all times. She's answering them, responding to all kinds of needs. I'm not sure if other counselors are that on the ground. I just can't imagine you are. And as I was there this summer, ICE was ramping up and the fear was there. And earlier today, Mazaher said, it's not just about the symbolism. It's about how grounding it is to have her in that position. And I saw that because we were talking about it constantly. Is ICE going to come here? Where are they going next? And ultimately, some of the folks we'd be talking with feel like, but you know what? We have her there. And that means something. That people felt safer. They felt more protected. And they knew that their voices were being heard and relayed. And that doesn't just go for the immigrant community. Mazaher is so intersectional. She's the only person, only council member I saw when the Johnson County supervisors were voting for the Equal Protections Resolution for trans folks. The only one, which I know folks are busy, but that said, her being there so mattered. I've done some labor organizing, and when I look at this council, all of you are wonderful, of course, but when I think of who's really fought the hardest for workers, it is Mazaher, absolutely. That means so much for so many of us. And so to see you all, I'm concerned about the future of this next year or so on council with all of you. Is this a sign of how you're going to vote? We need people to be able to be fed and housed. Mazaher is seeing this day in, day out in the work that she does. And I call for some transparency. How is this decision made? Who nominated? Why? And also, Megan, I ask that you maybe tender your resignation and step down. I know you care about Iowa City, but you can be there voting. You don't have to be in this role. I've gone to rallies, seen Mazaher stand there with that title, and it's really meant something. And I know that you being there matters too, but right now, as ICE is circling, it matters perhaps a lot more for Mazaher to be there. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone that came during this time to speak. We're going to move on to item 10, which is planning and zoning matters. 10A is preliminary and final plat, Iowa Meadows. Resolution approving the preliminary and final plat of Iowa Meadows subdivision, Iowa City, Iowa. Can I get a motion to approve, please?
So moved, Mo.
Second, Sally.
All right, and then welcome, Danielle.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Danielle Sisman, Neighborhood and Development Services. As you introduced, this is a prelim and final plat for Iowa Meadows, located here in the dashed white outline. This is properties at 1257 and 1527 Slothower Road. They previously were annexed into the city and never subdivided, but kind of divided into two homestead parcels in the late 60s and early 70s. The current owners are requesting approval of the combined prelim and final plat tonight to create an 18.2-acre subdivision, where those two existing homes would be on two lots, and there would be three other outlots created. And the proposed subdivision would allow for the sale of the land that does not have the homes on them. This is the actual plat diagram submitted with the application. As I said, it's never been subdivided before. They're not actually proposing any development at this time. It's largely agricultural where it's not already occupied by homes. The future land use map and the district plan both indicate low density residential development or future urban development in this area. However, there is no city sewer service at this time, and one or more lift stations would need to be constructed before future development could occur. Given that the proposed subdivision is to just simply create lots for the existing single-family homes and will not result in any additional development, the proposed subdivision is consistent with the comprehensive plan at this time. As far as subdivision standards go, the proposed subdivision meets the required subdivision standards. It does have access to a roadway that's unimproved, and as I said, any additional development in the area would require additional improvements to be made to bring it to urban standards at that time. As I said, it's not intended to result in that at this time. So here we are at the prelim and final plat. There is a subdividers agreement as part of this that outlines all of those conditions. And staff does recommend adoption of this resolution. And at their December 3rd, 2025 meeting, by a vote of 7-0, the Planning and Zoning Commission concurred with staff's recommendation. I'm happy to answer questions.
Here are no questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone from the public like to address this topic? If you're online, please raise your virtual hand. I don't see anyone online right now. Seeing no one in person, council discussion. Roll call, please.
Alter.
Yes.
Burgess.
Yes.
Harmson.
Yes.
Moe.
Yes.
Sala.
Yes.
Teague.
Yes.
Weiline.
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. 10B, rezoning west of Ava Circle and south of Kennedy Parkway. Ordinance rezoning approximately 13.60 acres of property from Interim Development Research Park to medium density single family residential for 4.75 acres and rural residential for 8.85 acres for property located at west of Ava Circle and south of Kennedy Parkway. This is the second consideration, and staff is requesting expedited action.
I move that the rule requiring that ordinances must be considered and voted on for final passage of two meetings prior to the meeting at which is to be finally passed be suspended, that the second consideration and vote be waived, and that the ordinance be voted on for final passage at this time.
Moved by Moe.
Second.
Seconded by Alter. Anyone from the public like to address this topic? Yes, welcome.
Gina Landau from Navigate Homes. I'm actually the applicant, my company is, and I know that this is a rezoning, but there's always questions about what the plan is, and the plan is 19 single-family homes. We're real close to the interstate, so they'll be slightly smaller than the area that's adjacent to it, but comparable, and so that's basically what is driving this rezoning request.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's anything else from the council on that. Anyone from the public like to address this topic that was a part of the development team? CNO1, council discussion.
Build those homes.
Yeah. All right. Roll call, please.
Burgess.
Yes.
Harmson.
Yes.
Moe.
Yes.
Sala.
Yes.
Teague.
Yes.
Weiline.
Yes.
Alter.
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Could I get a motion to pass and adopt?
So moved. Moe.
Second. Okay.
Roll call, please.
Harmson.
Yes.
Moe.
Yes.
Sala.
Yes.
Teague.
Yes.
Weiline.
Yes.
Alter.
Yes.
Burgess.
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Item number 11 is our regular formal agenda. 11A, 2026 Parking Garages Maintenance and Repair Project. This is a resolution approving project manual and estimate of cost for the construction of the 2026 Parking Garages Maintenance and Repair Project. Establish an amount of bid security to accompany each bid, directing city clerk to post notice to bidders, and fixing time and place for receipt of bids. I'm going to open the public hearing, and welcome.
Joe Welter from Engineering. So this is our annual project. This year we'll be working at three of the ramps, Chauncey Swan, Court Street Transportation, and Dubuque Street Ramp. You can see a lot of list of different things that we're going to be doing. I tried to highlight the ones that were kind of the bigger items. So Chauncey Swan, we're going to be doing $230,000 of new membrane. At Court Street, we're going to do penetrating sealer through the full ramp. That's going to be $220,000. Dubuque Street, We have recoating of some membrane, $180,000 for that, and also at Dubuque Street, new membrane, $360,000. So that's almost $1 million worth of work between those items. We are going to try a new heavy-duty membrane on the turning radiuses in the Dubuque Street. It's a new product that we haven't used before, but the university has used and had some really good success with it. So we're pretty excited to try that on this project. You'll notice construction costs $1.25 million. Normally, our projects in the last couple of years have been $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. So this is a substantially bigger project. We're addressing a lot of needs that we've had for quite some time. And that has been something that parking has been asking for some more funding, and we've gotten that more funding. And so we're finally getting to that point of getting these bigger projects done and hopefully going to catch up with a lot of the maintenance that we haven't gotten to on the ramps. Got a bid opening at the end of the month, award in February. Construction, we're starting a little bit earlier than normal. Normally, we wait till middle of May, but with the extra work that we have in this contract, we want to start a couple months early. So there will be some disruption there when the students are still in town and parking in the ramp. So we'll have some creativity with the contractor, depending on who gets picked, figuring out how we're going to do traffic control and keep people in the ramp while still doing our maintenance. We are trying to get the project done before the beginning of the school year, so mid-August with a final completion in September. Shive Hattery has been our consultant for going on our sixth year here with their contract, so do an excellent job, and we're really satisfied with what they've been doing. So any questions?
The timing of construction in Chauncey Swan and locations, how does that impact farmers market?
That's a great question, and until we get the contractor selected and see what they're proposing, I won't have a perfect answer for that, but we will be restricting their activities to not impact those kinds of events. We have that in the contract documents, and so they're aware of that concern. We have some penetrating sealer on the lower level where the farmers market occurs. Most of the work, though, is up on the second and third level where staff and the Chauncey Hotel and public parks up in those areas. So we might have to move some people up. A lot of times we tried to do the work on the top deck, and then we move down, and then we push people up. And so probably something along those lines, try to minimize that impact. So,
Joe, you mentioned there will be new membrane installed in the Dubuque Street.
Yeah, new type of membrane.
Can you explain what the membrane is in the context of a parking deck?
Yeah. So it's that gray. It's kind of got a rough coat to it. So especially on the top decks of many of our ramps, we have that now. Capitol has that. Dubuque has that. Tower has that. So you'll see that a lot of places. This heavier duty membrane, it's a black instead of a gray. It's a lot thicker. So the membrane goes on in three coats. So you have a base coat, an intermediate coat, and then a top coat. And so this material is actually down at the IMU ramp. And it's done really well. If you've ever been in that ramp, it's really tight corners. Does really good on the radiuses. So we're hoping that this will wear and last a little bit longer. It has a longer warranty period to it. And so our designer was thinking that it was time for us to try something like this. The extra price point is only a little bit, but the warranty period is almost twice as long on the product. So we're hoping that this will make it so that we don't have to go back and redo that membrane quite as often, especially on those turning areas where the most traffic wear occurs.
Thank you.
And that membrane has a grip to it, which is good. It also, does it protect the concrete from especially salts and water getting into the concrete? Is that its purpose?
Yeah, so the penetrating sealer, like I talking about, that we're going to do on the lower level of Chauncey and then in Court Street Transportation Center, that's the first line of defense that we do. So when a ramp's still relatively new and we haven't had much salt intrusion into the ramp, we put that penetrating sealer on. That only lasts a couple of years. once you get to putting the membrane on, that's what you're fixed with. You can't ever kind of go back to a lesser thing. You're always going to be coating and recoating that with membrane. But it does keep the moisture out of the joints, and it keeps the moisture out of the slab. With that moisture in the wintertime comes chlorides, because we use salt to get rid of ice and snow. And so once that gets down in the slab and then starts eating away at the metal, the rebar, the reinforcing, so that's what we're trying to do, is keep that intrusion out of the deck, the slab.
And make the parking garages last forever.
I won't guarantee that, but we're staving off something major by doing these repairs, and especially the level that we're doing this year is really going to help us start catching up.
Okay.
So if we can put some of these bigger projects together several years in a row, we'll really catch up on a lot of the maintenance that we need to do.
Is anything in these repairs related to some of the doors that go into anything like that?
We have a separate project this year to start working on doors. We're starting at the tower ramp. That's not a formal project, so it's not coming before council because of the dollar amount. But we are starting on those projects. It's a different CIP number, different CIP fund. We started with tower because of some of the needs there, and then we're going to start going into some of the other ramps with that. So it's going to be like we've done with other maintenance things. It starts in one ramp, and then we're going to start working our way around to different ones.
I ask because the downtown ambassadors mentioned to me when I met with them a couple times about some need specifically in towers, so that's good to hear.
Yeah, tower is going to get that this year. We did some repairs on Dubuque Street 2 years ago on some of the doors in Dubuque Street, so and we're going to be working on some stair wells in Capitol Street here in the near future, and we'll probably address the door concerns there at that time. So
well, sound like no more questions about membranes and all that stuff. So thank you.
Thank you.
We will move on to public comment. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address this topic? Seeing no one come forth, I'm going to close the public hearing. Could I get a motion to approve, please?
So moved. Mo.
Second. Burgess.
All right. Council discussion.
Throw down the membranes.
All right.
Yeah.
Roll call, please.
Mo?
Yes.
Sala?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes.
Wyline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmson?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. 11B, Collector Well Number 1, Structural Electrical Upgrades and Well Reconstruction Project. Resolution approving project manual and estimate of cost for the construction of the collector well number 1, structural electrical upgrades and well reconstruction project. Establishing amount of bid security to accompany each bid. Directing city clerk to post notice to bidders and fixing time and place for receipt of bids. I'm going to open the public hearing and welcome.
Hi, John with Iowa City Water. So this is a collector well. We have five of these. I found a nice photo from the flood of 2008 of collector well 1. I brought it up because this is a nice show of what it is, why it's important, and it's not the first time we've put money into this well, because after that flood we had to raise all that electrical that you can kind of see peeking above the sandbag mounds there. So collector well 1 is the farthest north point there with the arrow on it. Then you can see the water plant to the south. For this project, there's two bid packages. The first bid package is what we're talking about today. The second bid package is to divert our lagoon solids effluent water over to the collector well 1. That way we can reuse it in our treatment process after it goes through the lime solid settling process. It's basically clarified water, and it would be nice to just reuse it instead of put it back in the river. That project or that bid package is currently still being reviewed by the regulators, so we don't know when or if we're going to be able to bring that one before council. So we'll be doing the first bid package on collector well 1, which involves quite a bit of work. So just a little bit of background information on what a collector well is. This is a graphic that I pulled off of Rainy Collector Wells. That middle case on there is about a 16-foot diameter concrete tube essentially sunk into the ground. In our case, those tubes are about 50 feet deep. Then at the bottom, you can see there's those things called laterals. Those are screens. So they do is they go down and they cut a hole in the side of the caisson, and then they hydraulically jack the screens out into the aquifer. In this case, that aquifer is an alluvial aquifer, so it's essentially groundwater under the influence of the Iowa River. So it gives us nice filtration to start. So we use the riverbank and this alluvium to filter the water before we draw it up into the plant to treat it. So we have really good quality source water because of this function. So these collector wells are key to us being able to minimize the dissolved organic carbons and all the things that come from that in our drinking water. So it's our nice first barrier. Our second great barrier is our granular activated carbon filters. So these wells were installed in 2000. All wells fail over time. Their specific yield lessens. Collector well one right now is basically not functioning. We pump it once a day just to keep everything fresh. So overnight it kind of fills up, and then we pump it down in the morning, and then it just fills up again overnight. Just do that to run the water through the system, because if you let it sit there, it'll corrode over time. So the scope is quite extensive. We got to modify the well house when they were installed. It didn't give all the access hatches needed for today's best practices. We need to abandon one of the laterals that seemed to kind of swivel out of the way and up into the river, so it's not so much doing what it needs to do. It floated. We need to rehab two of the other existing well laterals, install two new laterals, do all the pump testing, pump sizing, and install new pumps, and then test a couple other well sites, and then set up for the installation of the lagoon effluent and repair any trails damaged during the work. And there will be some intermittent impacts on pedestrian traffic in that area during the project. So as far as the scope, this image here just shows the roof plan. So in the center there, there's quite a large rectangle. Well, that's just a big hole they're going to cut in it and put a hatch over the top. That gives us access to both of the wells, as well as the middle hatch, which they use as sort of a ad hoc elevator to bring people up and down out of the well while they're working. So that was the big feature that we need in order to conform with best practices for confined space and retrieval methods. This is showing the laterals. They're the dashed lines radiating out from the caisson. So one with the X's off to kind of the north and east there is the one that's to be abandoned. Then there's two that are going to be essentially jetted. So they just put a high-pressure water jet down there and drag out any of the sand and debris that's collected in and over the years. And then they'll push out two new 12-inch laterals. Hopefully this will increase the production and extend the life of this well. Schedule, so bid letting here in February, award February 17th, and then construction season or construction period is quite extended, mainly because there's not very many contractors that do this work. There's only two that we know of, and they tend to be booked up pretty solid. So we need to give a bit of a window there so we can get on their schedule for this work. It's likely that we'll have a general contractor, and those contractors that do the actual lateral work will be a subcontractor to that. Estimated cost is $3.5 million, and Aline and I have been working on this project. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
So the original lateral wells had filled or failed or one of each? Is the idea that these things are not forever infrastructure? They need to be constantly replaced?
Correct, yeah. There's with any well, whether it be oil, gas, water, they wear out over time and they lose their capacity, so you have to rehabilitate them. In this case, when the wells were originally installed, it was kind of a new technology in the U.S., and the installer for one of those laterals didn't do what they needed to do, and it kind of wiggle-waggled itself up out of the alluvium. So we knew over time that that was happening, and we had to close that one off. The other two then slowly fouled with bacteria over time. So all those screens have, you know, essentially small pores, and they occlude over time. And so you have to send divers down there to inspect them, and then once you figure out what's going on, then you have to pick the right rehabilitation method to bring them back. You never quite know what you're going to get with a well. So in this case, we'll get those two laterals rehabbed. We'll push the other two out, and we're shooting for getting ourselves back to where it was when it was originally installed and turned as production.
And is the expectation, though, that every 20, 30 years,
yes,
a major project needs to be done to, that's just the way the system works?
Yes, okay. And this is one of five. So we did collector wells 3 and 4, just rehab them. Mm-hmm. We found that the screens were kind of oversized, so we were pulling a lot of sand in. But eventually those wells are going to need work as well to put more capacity laterals in there. But then you have to play the hydrogeologics with it because, you know, it's, you can't just take more water out of one and not impact the other. So you have to look at the cones of depression and whatnot. And there's a pretty good group, the Iowa Geologic Survey at the IHR, that helps us out quite a bit when we do the hydrogeologics. So this project has been in the works for, you know, like 5 years. We've been studying the wells, the hydrogeographic profiles in the area, what makes sense as far as the investment, contemplating, are we having a sunk cost fallacy here? Should we do something else? But after all the study and everything, even going so far as to put, you know, a dollar per MGD produced on the life cycle cost analysis, this project makes sense for the dollars that we're spending on it.
Thanks.
I just, out of curiosity, you said that you're using sand to filter the water before it comes to the plant, so you treat up. Is this like mechanism you are, like, is this like what we used to use and still using it, or this is new thing you are adding?
This has been in the system since the plant was constructed. So okay. These wells, I think, were actually completed before the plant went online.
Yeah, and also I'm curious to know, like, how deep is the well go down, like, of the river where you get the sand around it?
Yeah, we actually have a relatively shallow alluvial aquifer along the Iowa River, and so these caissons are typically about 50 feet deep. Groundwater resources, the Salarian and Jordan aquifer in our region, the Salarian's 500 feet deep. We have three of those wells, and the Jordan is 1,500 feet deep, and we have one of those wells. But we use those in the summer for nitrate dilution.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's cool.
Yeah, I was curious if there's, because y'all would know, out of curiosity, if there's any, because this is something like what Councillor Moe is saying, it's just going to need to be replaced every 20 to 30 years, and there's five of them. Is there any cool on the horizon technology that you're excited about that maybe we could look forward to?
There's interesting technologies, but they all have a price tag, and none of them are applicable to our wells.
Okay.
And just to clarify, we're not replacing the wells. We're just rehabilitating the existing wells.
Yeah.
We are doing two test wells during this project, but we anticipate that we wouldn't look to put in new horizontal collector wells. We would probably stick with vertical wells because they're less capital intensive and easier to maintain over time. So, for instance, like Cedar Rapids does about a 60 MGD per day, which is 10 times the amount of water we produce. And their well field along the Cedar River to the north, I think, has a handful of collector wells and then periodically spaced vertical wells so that the cones of depression aren't influencing each other. So if you ever drive along, I forget the name of the road, but close to the Cedar River, you'll see wells, you know, very tall wells because they get them up out of the floodplain with all electronics. Mm-hmm. Just along the way, spaced out. So that's kind of a similar setup as that we would probably explore going forward with any new wells, is sticking with vertical wells because they're overall less expensive to maintain.
Okay.
And this is all enterprise fund?
Correct.
All right. Thank you much. Is there anyone from the public that would like to discuss this topic? Seeing no one in person or online, I'm going to close the public hearing. Could I get a motion to approve, please?
So moved. Alter.
Second, Wyline.
Council discussion.
I think great. We have great water in Iowa mm-hmm. City. So
yeah.
Yeah. Roll call, please.
Sala.
Yes.
Teague.
Yes.
Wyline.
Yes.
Alter.
Yes.
Burgess.
Yes.
Harmson.
Yes.
Moe.
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Item 11C, Iowa City Fire Department Station 2 Ambulance Agreement. Resolution authorizing the mayor to sign and the city clerk to attest to a share and endowment, and I can't say this word easily, and I can't even say it, indemnification agreement. Yeah, what you said. And Johnson County to allow Johnson County Ambulance Service to store and operate an ambulance from Fire Station 2. I'm going to open up the public hearing, and I'll turn it over to Eric Gores.
Thank you, Mayor. So the idea behind this agreement is to co-locate the ambulance service in our various fire departments. As council is aware, the fire department, or fire stations, I should say, are scattered throughout the city so that they can improve their response time. Well, same thing goes for the ambulance that is co-located there. We've had one of these co-location agreements at Station 4 on the northeast side since 2016, and we've got a lot of growth on the west side, and it was decided that co-locating at Station 2 would make sense as well. That's the one on Emerald Street over by Finkbine Golf Course. So we've taken the agreement from Station 4 and basically replicated it for Station 2, and that's what brings us here.
Hearing no questions, anyone from the public like to talk about this indemnification agreement? No. Seeing no one from the public, I'm going to close the public hearing. Can I get a motion to approve, please?
So move, Saleh.
Second, Burgess.
All right, moved by Saleh, seconded by Burgess. Council discussion.
I just like that the expansion is happening.
I just remembered that I maybe had a question. I don't know if this would be for what staff or it would be for the chief. So apologies for not being timely with that. So I kind of just learned recently that I think it's a pretty new a newer situation that I don't know if it's just by county or if municipalities can consider ambulance services to be an essential service, and then you can like levy a tax maybe on that. I was wondering if maybe having this type of an agreement, if that's been explored, or if we're thinking or planning on doing something like that, and that makes this kind of agreement more lucrative. I don't know if anybody can speak to that.
Well, I'll let the city manager make comments about whether that other idea has been explored. I'm not aware of that. This is not lucrative. We're not getting any money.
Lucrative is a bad word. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is just we're doing basically for the benefit of our residents so that they can get quicker service. You know, we do have the indemnification that's important to the city. It's particularly important to people in my office. And so we're covered in that regard. But basically, they have to kind of earn their keep, so to speak, in the bay and bedrooms that they get. I don't know if the city manager has any additional comments about funding.
Yeah, the levy you're referencing was created by the state legislature a handful of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago maybe. And at the time, there was a discussion about that. It's really got to start at the county level. So Johnson County kind of has to lead that. But area fire chiefs did look at that. Again, it's been a few years. I don't recall all the specifics. There was a decision not to proceed. So I'd have to do some background to get you more information on that. But it was looked at shortly after the legislation was passed.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Roll call, please.
Teague?
Yes.
Wyline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmson?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Saleh?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. 11D, Emergency Water Conservation Ordinance. Ordinance amending Title 16 and Title Public Works, Chapter 3, City Utilities, Article C, Potable Water Use and Service. And staff is requesting expedited action. This is the second consideration.
I would move that the rule requiring that ordinances must be considered and voted on for the passage of two council meetings prior to the meeting in which it's to be finally passed be suspended, that the second consideration and vote be waived, and that the ordinance be voted on for final passage at this time.
Moved by Mo.
Second, Saleh.
All right. Public discussion. Anyone want to address this topic? Seeing no one in person, council discussion. Roll call, please.
Wyline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmsen?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Sala?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes. Motion passes 7-0. Could I get a motion to pass and adopt?
So moved.
Alter.
Second. Moe.
Roll call, please.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmsen?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Sala?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes.
Weinlein?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. 11E, trans trash removal and downtown alleys. Ordinance amending Title 16, entitled Public Works, Chapter 3, entitled City Utilities, Article H, entitled Solid Waste, Section 7, entitled Storage of Solid Waste, to require property and business owners within the downtown area subject to the solid waste container permit system to contract with a commercial waste hauler. This is the second consideration. Could I get a motion to approve, please?
So moved, Alter.
Second, Moe.
All right. And anyone from the public like to address this topic? Seeing no one. Council discussion?
I was curious if we could do an expedited consideration for this because bringing up our downtown ambassadors again, I mean, I don't know if I would like to make them clean a bunch of crap from the alleys that for 2 more weeks if we can just get it done now because that's been a huge pain for them, you know, just being in the cold weather, like scraping garbage off of the ground. So that's, I would be into that.
I will say, at least this was something that was considered by staff to be expedited. I chose to not have this expedited on this agenda item, mainly because we have whomever the folks are. I don't want anything to be expedited, you know, if there's any trouble down the way. And that is the reason why I chose to just let it go as normal course when, because mm-hmm. if someone is potentially going to challenge something at some point, I just think going the regular route is often what this council has typically done. Mm-hmm. And so that is the reason why I chose to keep it just in the three votes as the council normally, you know, do it. Mm-hmm. But that was just my logic behind it.
Yeah.
But the question would be for the city attorney, is this something going, if we expedite it, it will be like taken against us somehow?
Well, I think the mayor is addressing a different question than you're posing to me, which is why he kind of made a political decision for why he would want to extend it. If your question for me is legally, can you? The answer is yes. The council could, since we've already got a motion on the table, I would suggest go ahead and passing the second consideration, if that's the will of council, and then having a motion to waive, I guess, third consideration, and then to go ahead and voting okay. yet another time.
Sure.
Yeah. And I understand if people need some more time, if we think that maybe businesses need more time to be able to prepare to comply with this, I just really feel for the folks who have to clean up this crap, like, okay. in the alleyways. You know, their jobs are already hard.
But also, my question will be, like, even if we expedite it and approve it today, is this going to be affected tomorrow, or it have, like...
It would be effective upon publication.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which would be a few days. City clerk may have more specificity to that, mm-hmm. but it would be several days away at least.
Sure.
Typically the second Thursday following the meeting.
The second following. Okay. Sure. Mm-hmm.
But this issue is not the first time that impacted or affected businesses are learning of this.
This is the second reading.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I'm just saying that this isn't the first time that these businesses found out that, oh, I've done something wrong, is I don't have a permit, or I'm putting it in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. The first time they're finding out about this is not from...
It was almost a month ago.
Us, right. Mm-hmm. They've been aware that this is a concern.
Yeah, at least the businesses that I am aware of who have been causing problems are aware and have been aware for some time.
Mm-hmm. And I would just say for myself, the expedited readings, I usually kind of gauge, is there public input? Do we have input? Is there concerns that might be addressed at the next reading? I would be very comfortable expediting this one.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm okay expediting also.
So, yeah.
Understanding the logic that you have.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I know, think I that... Yeah.
Being conservative about...
Mm-hmm.
Thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally fine.
So...
we should vote on the second reading and then do the expedition motion?
Yes, I would suggest you go ahead and vote on the second reading, and then some council member whose last name probably is Mo shall read the motion to expedite, and then you vote on that, and then vote for the third and final reading.
Sure.
Okay. If there is no more discussion, then roll call, please.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmsen?
Yes.
Mo?
Yes.
Sella?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes.
Weiline?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
And then I'd like to move that the rule requiring that ordinances must be considered and voted on for passage at two council meetings prior to the meeting at which is to be finally passed be suspended, that the second consideration and vote...
The third.
That the third consideration and vote be waived, and that the ordinance and vote be that's not really what I'm doing here.
Yeah,
so,
I have to listen more carefully.
Yeah, so I...
On there. Yeah. You need I think the there's second like one. Three different...
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't have the card.
No, that's okay.
With me.
Two passages prior to the meeting, which is to be finally passed, be suspended. That's the first. There's no language for that on my card.
There is another one.
Yeah. I can...
I'm sorry.
I would prefer to read it for this particular instance.
To make sure it's right.
Is it waiving second consideration?
Yes, we're waiving the third.
Waiving
and that the ordinance be voted on for final passage at this time.
Would you have the?
I'll give it a shot.
Okay, because I this is language we would use.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you did not actually make your
motion. I'd like to withdraw whatever partial.
That's sufficient.
Okay, great. Thank you. I move that the rule requiring that ordinances must be considered and voted on for passage at two council meetings prior to the meeting at which it is to be finally passed be suspended, that the third consideration and vote be waived, and that the ordinance be voted on for final passage at this time.
Moved by Burgess.
Second by Saleh.
Thank you.
Seconded by Saleh. All right, any council discussion?
You should probably ask if there's any public discussion,
yes,
too.
Any
probably
public,
not. But.
Yeah, anyone from the public like to address this topic? Seeing no one, council discussion. Roll call, please.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmsen?
Yes.
Mo?
Yes.
Sella?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes.
Weiline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Could I get a motion to pass and adopt?
So moved, Mo.
Second, Sella.
Roll call, please.
Harmsen? Wasn't that what we just
did? Not what we just did.
Motion to pass and adopt, I think, is the appropriate motion.
Okay. Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Harmsen?
Yes.
Mo?
Yes.
Sella?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes.
Weiline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. 11F, Downtown SMID Renewal, Ordinance Amending Title III, Finances, Taxation, and Fees of the City Code to reestablish the Iowa City Downtown Self-Supported Municipal Improvement District, pursuant to the provisions of Chapter 386, Code of Iowa, and providing for the establishment of an operation fund and the levy of an annual tax in connection therewith. Could I get a motion to pass and adopt?
Still motion to pass and adopt.
Second.
Saleh.
Moved by Saleh, seconded by?
Alter.
Alter. Great. And anyone from the public like to address this topic? Seeing no one in person or online, council discussion.
Exciting that we're making it bigger.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Roll call, please.
Mo?
Yes.
Sella?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes.
Weiline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmsen?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. All right. We'll move on to item 11G, State CDBG CV status of funding. Of funded activities, resolution approving the status of funded activities for CDBG hyphen CV funds received by the Iowa Economic Development Authority. And could I get a motion to approve, please?
So moved, Burgess.
Second, Mo.
All right, and welcome.
Hello, Erica Kubley with Neighborhood Services. So this item pertains to our CDBG CV shelter operations project in partnership with the Iowa Economic Development Authority and Shelter House. The status of funded activities is a state requirement for CDBG projects where we hold a public meeting and provide an update for council and the public on how the project is going about halfway through completion. In 2025, the state reached out to Iowa City with an opportunity for shelter operational funding through the federal CDBG CV dollars. This funding is tied to the 2020 CARES Act to prevent, prepare for, and respond to the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. With council support, we agreed to administer this activity, which provides operational funding for Shelter House's emergency facility. It's a 70-bed shelter that operates year-round at 429 Southgate Avenue in Iowa City. We were awarded $301,500 in CDBG-CV funds for this project. $300,000 was allocated to Shelter House, and $1,500 in administrative funds goes to city staff time. So Shelter House has expended $181,840 on shelter operations to date, and the city has expended its eligible admin dollars. Accomplishments include provision of emergency shelter to individuals experiencing homelessness, which they're doing ongoing. And since starting the project, we've had one quarterly report that we've received for July through September. This report reflects 165 individuals served, of which 94% are extremely low income and 6% are very low income. So the next quarterly report for October through December will be due in January. Work remaining is to continue shelter operations through May 2026 and expend the remaining available funds. Shelter House is projected to assist 400 individuals under 30% AMI by May 2026. So we are ahead of schedule to meet both the expenditure deadline and the beneficiary numbers by May. And at this time, we don't anticipate any changes to incorporate for this project. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Since this is under the CARES Act, is this a one-time CDBG-CV grant?
Yeah, this is a supplemental. I think they must have had extra funds at the end of their all of their allocations, so they created this activity. So this is expected to be one time.
And with the work that they've been doing and the work remaining, is any of this apart from their core activities, or is this just to help them, you know, with ongoing funding for their operations?
I think it's intended just to be ongoing operational funding. Okay. So it's basically paying for staffing costs.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Hearing no more questions. Thank you. Anyone from the public like to address this topic? Seeing no one, council discussion.
Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Sala?
Yes.
Teague?
Yes.
Wyline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmson?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Item 11H, Iowa City 2026 State Legislative Priorities, resolution establishing the city of Iowa City's 2026 State Legislative Priorities. Could I get a motion to approve, please?
So moved, Mo.
Second, Harmson.
All right, and we'll just ask Kirk to come on back up.
This will be a little quicker than my previous presentation. Kirk Lehman, Assistant City Manager. This is essentially an updated legislative priorities resolution, similar to what you had seen in December, but with those changes made that were requested in that meeting. So it should reflect all the changes. I've summarized them in my memo to you all, but happy to answer any questions if you have them.
No.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thought it was great.
It's good. Yeah.
All right. Anyone from the public like to address this topic? Seeing no one, council discussion.
I'm just appreciative that staff was open to some substantial changes. I think that they really reflect what we as a body want, yeah. And appreciate your flexibility in being able to say, yep, we'll make those changes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Teague?
Yes.
Wyline?
Yes.
Alter?
Yes.
Burgess?
Yes.
Harmson?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Sala?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0. Item number 12 is council appointments. 12A is Climate Action Commission. One vacancy to fill an unexpired term upon appointment through December 31st, 2027. And we'll enter into council discussions. There were four applicants and one in the see who people are thinking they want to appoint.
I would like to discuss Alex, Alexandra Buchanan. So mm-hmm. I've known Alex for years. She's works in this world professionally. Like she mm-hmm. knows the built environment and sustainability things very well. It's also, she's one of those people you'll see riding her station wagon bike with three kids in tow around town. So I think she'd be an amazing fit for this commission.
Sure. Yeah, I would agree.
She's my top person.
Yeah. I did want to give, actually, because, you know, we just read them in order. And I loved that Alyssa Bedford was like, I don't know a lot, but I'm really eager to learn. And I love that kind of enthusiasm and people applying for this. And I hope that she her name will still be on the list and that she considers other commissions, because I love the idea of bringing in more people. Mm-hmm. But I think that we cannot pass on the experience and expertise of Alexandra. So
I agree with Alexandra. I will say there was another one just like Alyssa that, you know, didn't have experience, and, you know, that willingness just from a lay person to jump on a commission. I think those voices are also important.
Yes. Thank you, Raymundo.
Yes.
A lot of good candidates, but we're going to go with Alexandra.
Yeah. Could I get a motion to appoint Alexander Buchanan?
So moved, Wyline.
Alexandra.
Second,
Saleh.
All right, moved by Wyline, seconded by Saleh. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes 7-0. 13, announcements of vacancies previous. 13A, Public Art Advisory Committee. One vacancy to fill an unexpired term. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. Tuesday, January 13, 2026. Airport Zoning Board of Adjustment, one vacancy to fill a 5-year term. Airport Zoning Board of Adjustment, one vacancy to fill a 5-year term. Board of Appeals, one vacancy for a licensed electrician to fill a 5-year term. Board of Appeals, one vacancy for a HVAC professional to fill an unexpired term. Historic Preservation Commission, one vacancy for a Brown Street representative to fill a 3-year term. Historic Preservation Commission, one vacancy for a Jefferson Street representative to fill a 3-year term. Historic Preservation Commission, one vacancy for a Woodlawn Avenue representative to fill a 3-year term. Vacancies will remain open until filled. We are at item number 14, City Council information.
I would just like to highlight that this past week there was put on by young members of our local music scene, our local punk scene, put on a really good benefit show for directly for street outreach. They raised over $1,500. Like, it was directly to street outreach and got a bunch of physical donations. So shout out to those folks for organizing that. And I love it when young people do things.
Thanks. All right, we'll move on to item number 15, reports on items from city staff, city manager's office.
Not tonight, thanks.
City attorneys?
Nothing for me, thank you.
And our city clerk?
I do not.
All right. Item number 16, could I get a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Moved by Bergen, second by Sala. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? We are adjourned.
Sure, thank you.
Yes.